Hello, I'm Peter Callahan. This is number 0683, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. You know, when we went to college back in the 70s in Montreal, we used to call him Peter Anthony Holder. Anyway, here it comes, right now. Enjoy.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0683. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet journalist, broadcaster, and author Alan Hustak as he talks about the monarchy, including when he traveled with Prince Charles to Canada's Arctic region.
We did a trip to the Arctic. The royal plane broke down, so the prince had to travel with the press, aboard the press plane. He writes in his memoirs that it was the last time he felt as a real human being without any real restrictions. I remember one instance, I was shooting a documentary with him. The documentary is called Itanawit Ikninya. That is what the Inuit refer to him. And I asked one day, what does this mean? And I was told, oh, that just means son of the big boss.
Marnie Goldman, author of True to Myself, talks about dealing with PTSD. Statistics now say that 1 in 3 people will suffer from some sort of trauma. Does Marnie think those numbers are high?
Oh, no, it's definitely right. What's going on is mental health and trauma and PTSD has been here forever. Nobody just ever wanted to talk about it because it's taboo. I think pretty much the statistics now are probably one out of everybody is going through something right now.
Science writer Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, talks about many things, including the delay of NASA's Artemis mission. He says part of the problem is the so-called wet dress rehearsal tests that took place on the launch pad only completed about 90% of the tests needed.
Those tests basically skipped about 10% of things that they needed to run through to make sure that the rocket is in fine order to do its mission. And guess what? It's part of that 10% of things they didn't test in the wet dress rehearsal that's now coming to light, causing problems for them in the actual attempts to launch. So there are folks saying, well, who knows what else is in those 10% of things that were never tested properly that are going to be cropping up either at launch or post-launch during the mission as well.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0683, was Peter Callahan, who is an old college friend, now a well-respected actor, so I can't mention what we used to call him back in school. You've seen him on such shows as Murdoch Mysteries, The Newsroom, The Red Green Show, and dozens of other programs and movies. Thank you very much, Peter, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Now, let's get right to the stuff. John Chappelle has been the official beekeeper at Buckingham Palace for 15 years. When Queen Elizabeth II died, protocol officers told him something he didn't know. It's part of his job to inform the bees of the royal death. Let me repeat that. It's part of his job to inform the bees of the royal death. In whispered tones, Chappelle, who is 79, informed the bees that the monarch was dead and King Charles III was taking over. The person who has died is the master or mistress of the hives, he said. Someone important in the family who dies, and you don't get any more important than the queen, do you? As for the bees, we don't know how worried or concerned they were over the news. After all, they still have their own queen, don't they? Ranjita Kandu of Kodamata, India, has accused her husband of stealing and selling one of her kidneys 4 years ago. Kundu recently discovered after visiting the doctor that she has only one kidney. She believes that when she was treated for kidney stones 4 years ago, her husband secretly arranged for one of her kidneys to be removed and sold on the black market. "I was unaware of the whole incident," she said. She even knows who he sold it to, Asim Haldar, who also lives in her district. Kundu and her husband were married for 12 years before he took off with another woman 8 months ago. Kundu said with help from his sister, he sold the organ to make up for dowry money he believed was owed to him. Police have taken him into custody and are now investigating. You know, if you were to put this plot in a movie, no one would believe you. Also, how in love are you if you're willing to sell your wife for spare parts? Ugh. Last month, Applebee's introduced chicken wing sauce flavored lip gloss. Why? Applebee's is known for first dates and wings, claims the restaurant chain's chief marketing officer, Joel Yashinsky. It takes $65 to buy all four flavors for a limited time. Which, by the way, speaking of companies selling things like that for a limited time, Velveeta introduced their cheesy martini, the Veltini, for a limited time. Other companies have introduced Lucky Charms eyeshadow and lip liners and Mentos's mint-colored fingernail polish. Well, Heinz won't take it sitting out. They're announcing a line of clothing that comes with ketchup stains because, as their company statement says, when it's Heinz, it's not a stain, it's a statement. Once again, proof positive that people will pay for just about anything. And the world is filled with people who have more dollars than cents. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Pennsylvania man has been sentenced to jail time and probation after he stole sex toys from the Adult World store in Montgomery Township, then fled to a nearby hotel. 30-year-old Jacob McFarland pleaded guilty to misdemeanor counts of retail theft and simple assault. Police said McFarland entered Adult World, at which point he selected a fleshlight and an auto blow AI, then left without paying. You know, something called an auto blow AI conjures up scary thoughts. I mean, there are some things you really shouldn't be trusting a computer for.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
A store clerk attempted to stop McFarland in the parking lot. However, McFarland threatened to stab him, prompting the clerk to let him go. The clerk was able to positively identify McFarland because McFarland had recently applied for a position at the store. Total value of the stolen items was $345.98. I'm guessing he was hoping for an employee discount.
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
Several minutes after arriving to the scene, police located McFarland at the Staybridge Suites.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it, and I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
McFarland was taken into custody, at which point they discovered he had a knife on his person.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore.
Got that right. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Alan Eustach is a veteran Canadian journalist, author, and broadcaster. We had him on the show a little over a decade ago to mark the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. He wrote a book on that topic called Titanic, The Canadian Story. Well, he's back again to talk about another topic that he knows quite a great deal about, the monarchy. Alan joins us via Zoom from Saskatchewan. Hi, Alan.
Well, hello. I don't know that I know a great deal about the monarchy, but I certainly have done a number of royal tours. Yeah.
Well, you certainly have come in contact with the Queen more often than I have. You have traveled with the Queen three times, and I believe you've also come in contact with the current King when he was much younger.
Well, I traveled with Prince Charles in 1975 when he was known as Action Man. We did a trip through the Arctic, and his plane, the royal plane, broke down. So the prince had to travel with the press aboard the press plane. He writes in his memoirs that it was the last time he felt as a real human being without any real restrictions. It was a fun tour, but I will remember that he seemed to be a little bewildered. I felt sorry for him on that tour. He was a royal, but I think he was just growing into and becoming accustomed to what he was headed for. I remember one instance, I was shooting a documentary with him. The documentary is called Itanawit Ikninya. That is what the Inuit refer to him. And I asked one day, what does this mean? And I was told, oh, that just means son of the big boss, which I think is a pretty good translation. But I remember we were in Resolute Bay and it was like bitterly, bitterly cold. I put up the hood on my parka because I knew it was going to be cold when we got out there. So I told His Highness that it might be a good idea to put up the hood on his parka before he descended the gangway or left the plane. And I always remember he turned to me and said, oh, no, I can't do that. One must let one's people see oneself. And I thought that description of one must let one's peoples see oneself was a little odd. To make a long story a bit longer, I can tell you that 10 steps down the ramp, he had his hood up. It was that cold.
Well, the queen, I guess he learned from his mom, because the queen has always said that the monarchy has to be seen to be believed.
Well, exactly. And part of that, part of the monarchy or part of the appeal of the monarchy is the mystery. And I know with the arrival of television, I traveled with Her Majesty in 1978 when she came to open the Commonwealth Games. That was the first time that creepy peepees or electronic video cameras were used to cover a royal tour. I know that some people in the royal household were a little concerned. Up until then, you had to process film. And it took 3 or 4 hours to do that. So film couldn't be broadcast instantly. With the creepy peepees, of course, every move of the royal family could be seen, and it would be on the air almost instantly. And I know that at that time, there were members of the royal household who were a little worried, weren't quite sure what to make of us running around with these creepy peepees. But part of the appeal of the royal family has always been its distance and its removal. And of course, with the death of Lady Diana, or Princess Diana, that came into very, very sharp focus. When we did see that royal protocol and the conventions of protocol didn't always match what the people wanted.
As you mentioned, you've traveled with the Queen, covering her 3 times. Do you have any personal recollections or any interaction that you may have had with her?
Oh, well, Wanda, just because one travels with the Queen doesn't mean that you've become an intimate friend. I can tell you that the things that impressed me with the Queen were when you were in a room, you knew that she had arrived in the room even before you saw her. I know that's kind of difficult to explain, but she had this enormous persona. I've been in a receiving line once. Her Majesty did not deign to talk to me. I nodded as she passed by. But my fondest memory of the Queen was in 1978, when we did an exhausting tour of a number of small Alberta communities. She had been there to open the Commonwealth Games in 78. The day began gruelingly early, and she went through all of these small little Alberta towns, waving and poised and gracious and wonderful. And at the end of the day, I happened to be close enough to the limousine when the Queen ended the tour, and she got into the limousine. And just before the smoke glass windows went up, I happened to see her kick off her shoes, lean her head back on the headrest, close her eyes, and give this great sigh of exhaustion. I actually have a picture of that somewhere, and I can't find it, and I've been really damned at it looking for it. But it was an unguarded moment that showed her being absolutely human and not the figure that we see in public. I know that she had a sense of humor, not that she ever talked to me, but a number of people that I know who have met her talk about that. And then she was in Saskatchewan again in 1987 when I got probably the closest to her that I ever did. I was maybe 6 feet, 7 feet away taking pictures when I worked briefly for the CBC in Regina.
You mentioned your contact with the now king. Obviously, I've referred to him quite often as the world's longest living intern or apprentice. And now he has the job. How different do you think he is now as compared to when you knew him way back when, traveling through the Arctic?
Well, as I say, he wrote in his memoirs that the Arctic was the last time that he really felt kind of free. And I don't need to tell you the stories that the royalty become puppets of the firm. They become captive in the protocol that is required of the royals. I happen to see that Charles is already creating some waves. You may have read that he's going to lay off 100 members of his staff. He lived in one house. He's now moved into Buckingham Palace. And I don't think he needs to duplicate the staff that ran his affairs as the Prince of Wales now that he's the king. I do know that he is a great, great booster of the Commonwealth. I think we're going to have to wait, but I think he may turn out to be perhaps a better monarch than most people give him credit for. I ran into him again, by the way, in Montreal. He was there recently. And I yelled at him from the crowd, "Your Royal Highness, I sang for you in the Arctic." And he turned and acknowledged, I mean, he didn't know who I was. And he was about to come over and find out what that person yelling from the crowd was. And his advanced people just moved him away. This was after a meeting, I think, with Premier Charest.
As you said, you think he'll make a better king than people give him credit for.
I think so. I think he has spent so much time preparing for the monarchy. Let me put it this way. Unlike the queen, who didn't want to be the monarch and discovered, well, certainly she didn't expect to be monarch at 26 when her father died. I don't think there was much preparation there. This man has prepared for the job for, well, since the day he was born. So I think that he will attempt to put his own mark on it. I think most people are rather ambivalent about the man. His mother was revered. His mother was loved, even by people who aren't monarchists. I mean, even by people in Quebec. I know that every time she visited Quebec, she received a warm, if not an enthusiastic, welcome. You know, we'll just have to see where Charles takes the monarchy. I think most Canadians are ambivalent. I think it'll be very difficult for Canada to get rid of the monarchy. You would need all 10 provinces by a vote of 60%, and then a national referendum to become a republic or to replace the monarchy. So I think we're stuck with him, whether no matter what we get, we are stuck with him as our king. You know, Canada's been ruled by we tend to forget that we have been ruled by a monarchy for 500 years, first under the French, now under the English. So monarchy, the constitutional monarchy is ingrained in the national fabric.
Also, there's another little quirk to what you just said earlier about removing the monarchy. The fact that you would have to get all provinces to agree, it is indeed opening up the constitution to reform. And there are other things that people just don't want to open the Constitution about because it will literally open another can of worms on other issues like Quebec.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I don't. There are people who gripe about the cost involved and the fact that it's still a symbol or a vestige of colonial Britain. Blah 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 blah. But I don't see a mass movement or concern among most Canadians who think that this is an extremely pressing issue. This archaic institution of the monarchy, it combines centuries-old pageantry, and we are certainly witnessing that magnificent pageantry every moment you turn on your television. It combines religion in that the Queen, of course, is the defender of the faith of the Anglican Church, and now the King. It combines public service and duty, a captive devotion to duty, I think. I certainly wouldn't want, I wouldn't want the job, Anthony. But all of that combines to, I think, make the monarchy a very important institution. The queen or the king has no real political power. But I can tell you out here in Saskatchewan, one example, they don't have political power, but they can certainly influence public policy. And there's one example I will give you. When the queen came to Saskatchewan, she obliquely and politely, and this is 50 years ago, in a speech, chastised Canadian government officials for the way that they were treating the subjects that were Indigenous people that had signed treaties with the Crown. It was as diplomatic a rebuke as the king or the queen is able to make. But that was 50 years ago. And the queen's only role was to be consulted, to be advised, and to warn. And we tend to forget that, you know, she served 12 prime ministers of Canada. She had an accumulated knowledge and wisdom that I think benefited every one of them. I have friends who say, well, you know, she was only a mascot. Well, she may have been a mascot, but she certainly was an important constitutional head and Queen of Canada.
Alan, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Anthony.
Veteran Canadian journalist, author, and broadcaster Alan Hustak. As I mentioned earlier, he is the author of Titanic, The Canadian Story. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the program number for this show, which is show number 0683, and you'll find links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You'll also find links to a newspaper that he's currently running in Saskatchewan. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that is heard on many a fine radio station, including WLSL LPFM in Dade City, Florida.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on The Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Available on Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and just about every other way you stream audio. This is The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's everywhere you want to be. And some places you don't.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about emotional trauma and PTSD. Plus, you have a visit from science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day coming your way. And much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. At times, geography can be hard. The recently renamed Washington Commanders are, understandably, trying to drum up excitement for their new brand, but one effect went disappointingly wrong. In week one of this new NFL season, an official gear truck just outside the stadium, which is located in Maryland, featured a mug with a big W on it and a silhouette of Washington State in the background. Of course, the Commanders Washington is the District of Columbia variety. The mugs were quickly removed from the inventory. I'm also assuming that the person who ordered the mugs to be made was also removed. In a My Bad for the Ages, the city of Philadelphia erroneously chopped down 60 pounds of hops that belonged to the Philadelphia Brewing Company, despite the fact that the company's clear signage and fenced-off area should have been a hint to somebody. The city, though, thought they were weeds. The company wrote on its Instagram page, "The city took it upon themselves to completely destroy our hop garden, which they claim will cost them tens of thousands of dollars. A spokesperson for the city said the incident was the result of miscommunication and staff error, and it appeared the lot was overgrown. Well, again, I'm assuming the person who cut down the hops has been cut down from employment. The Summit County, Colorado Rescue Group was in a helicopter on September the 7th looking for a lost hunter when they spotted a man waving slowly and casually. The crew radioed that they had a subject that partially matched the description, but his backpack was upside down, so it was the wrong color, explained the group's Anna DeBattiste. The pilot said, "He's saying hi. He doesn't seem to be in distress, so they left," she added. In fact, it was the missing hunter, and in a classic case of blame the victim, DeBattiste said he should have waved aggressively with both arms overhead or waved a brightly colored piece of clothing. Thankfully, the crew went back and retrieved the man, who was cold and dehydrated, but otherwise unharmed. And I'm assuming that, like the last two stories, the rescue flight crew has been grounded. Yeah. In Fort Myers, Florida, Lee County deputies stopped to investigate a Nissan Altima that was parked blocking a bicycle lane on September the 3rd. Officers found a man reclined in the driver's seat. After giving them a false name, he was asked to exit the vehicle. That's when 34-year-old Randy Osterman reached into the console and removed a 3-foot-long steel sword, then paused to attach a dragon-shaped handle to the blade. Police backed off as Osterman poked the sword out of the car's window at them. As he tried to escape through the passenger door, Osterman was subdued and arrested. Officers found methamphetamine, marijuana, and a glass pipe in the car. I have a question. While he's taking the time to pull out the sword, then attach a dragon-shaped handle, are the cops just standing there and watching this? Or at the first sign, I would think, of the sword, isn't that the time to jump into action? Just a thought. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Toby Cohen and Jonathan Neiman booked a rental home in the Hamptons for 2 weeks, beginning on August the 22nd, to the tune of $10,000. On September 15th, they filed a lawsuit saying the home, owned by Agnes Melbard and Edouard Gasse, was uninhabitable. Why? Because the thermostat had been set to a minimum temperature of 70 degrees Fahrenheit and then locked. The plaintiffs and their families, who wanted the AC set at 68 degrees, were forced to endure continuous discomfort for the duration of their holiday, which ruined it for them. When they complained to the owners, they said they were told to suck it up and deal. Neiman and Cohen also allege that workers showed up to spray toxic chemicals in the backyard during their stay, which forced them to stay in for several hours. The suit asked for a full refund of their rental fee and any further relief this court deems just and proper.
Oh, dear Lord, I need a Perrier, a motivational cassette, and a fainting couch. Oh,
you know, I really do hope these snowflakes get nothing. In fact, I hope the judge gives them the third degree for the 2 degrees they're complaining about. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It is estimated that 1 in 3 people who experience severe trauma will develop post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. This is a statistic that Marnie Goldman knows all too well. She is a survivor, a spiritual life coach, and the author of True to Myself, Peace, Love, Marnie. She joins us via Zoom from New York. Hi, Marnie.
Hey, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. First of all, let's go and delve a little bit into your story. I mean, you are a survivor and a spiritual life coach. I would assume that perhaps one thing led to another. So let's go back a little bit and share some of your story.
Well, my trauma, I have lived
legit 52 years. I'm 52. My entire life, there was something that was so traumatic that had happened. So I didn't find out anything was wrong with me until I was 47 years old. So my entire life, I walked around thinking I was crazy, lazy, stupid, unmotivated, where I was just undiagnosed ADHD, OCD, depression. And I realized, okay, this makes sense. I'm connecting the dots. Now I know why I have this disorder. I behave this way. And I wanted people, when I hit rock bottom and I picked myself back up, I said, people cannot live like this and suffer alone. I need to share my story. And I wrote my book, which was a lifetime in the making. And I just love letting people know that where they're supposed to be, as much as they don't want it, where they think they should not be right now, it is exactly. I have been knocked down too many times to not trust the universe. It's not rejection. It's just redirection in life.
As I mentioned, one in three people who experience severe trauma will develop PTSD. Is that a statistic that surprises you? Or in your mind, you figure, yeah, that seems to be about right.
Oh, no, it's definitely right. What's going on is mental health and trauma and PTSD has been here forever. Nobody just ever wanted to talk about it because it's taboo. I think pretty much the statistics now are probably one, everybody is going through something right now.
Well, you mentioned that you didn't become aware of your situation until later in life. So what are some of the signs that you may have emotional trauma and not realize it?
So, okay, for me, it was the over-the-top reactions, like a level 3 situation gave a level 10 reaction. It didn't deserve that. The hibernating, I stayed in my house for months. I didn't leave. I withdrew from my activities. I just didn't do anything. There are people that sometimes they talk about feeling hopeless and they don't feel like they should be here. So there's a lot of things to look for. The loss of interest for me, not leaving my house, and the extreme, not knowing how to regulate my emotions properly.
So how does one begin to process?
You kind of look within and you know, most of us know our own bodies, our inner selves, and you know, one, people are afraid to say something. You know, 75% of college kids, there's 135% increase in anxiety and depression with college students since 2013. 135%, yet 75% will not go reach help because they're ashamed or embarrassed. And that is the most normal thing and the bravest thing is to reach out for help. And that's something that I just preach and hope people, because we know if we're not feeling right. We know if we see someone in our family not feeling right. Why are they in their room all the time? Why are they sleeping during the days now? There's things that we can see, whether it's ourselves or somebody else. I knew when I didn't get out of bed for weeks in dark rooms, I had to make a change.
Okay, so staying in your bed in dark rooms is one thing. But for instance, I admit, I'm a homebody. I'm basically a hermit. And that's what I like. So how do you know when you're dealing with a family member that is perhaps dealing with PTSD or perhaps dealing with trauma, or it's just a lifestyle that they enjoy?
You know what? I am so, when I say I live in the moment, people, it's very vague, but I am aware now. Why do I hear a certain song? Why am I reacting this way? Is it when I go to a certain city, am I not happy? What's going on here? And I realize all of these undiagnosed triggers that I've had and walked around with, I didn't know why I couldn't be in tight places with a lot of people and stimulation. So I started to pay attention to every time my body started to react. When I get anxiety, I start to shake or I start to sweat a little. So it's really paying attention and observing and noticing the difference in pattern in someone's behavior.
Okay, so what are the things that can affect your physical health or be part of your physical health that will directly have an impact on your mental state?
You know, it's funny. I internalized my trauma my whole life. And there's a very good chance that I was diagnosed 4 years ago with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And I believe the internal stress that I put on my body for years caused this autoimmune problem for me. Without mental health, there's no physical health. It's correlated. People do not understand that. That's why talking about it, reaching out to somebody. They have now the new 988 suicide crisis hotline for people. It's confidential. You don't have to be, you could be slightly distraught or in severe crisis mode, and they will have somebody come out to get you. There's help available today that I never had. So it's very important for people to reach out.
Generally speaking, have you always been a giving person? And the reason why I ask that question is, it's one thing to work on healing yourself, but then after that, you've decided to write this book to help others. So is that just the nature of your personality, or is this part of the healing process in itself for you?
You know, it's part of who I am. I was left homeless at 17, physically thrown from my car and left homeless, and that humbled me. And I don't remember myself ever being anything but the most caring, generous, loving kind of person. But what the good thing is that when I started to write my book and do my podcast, that's cathartic for me, helping people. I love when I'm able to speak. I could do this all day long and just sit and talk to people that it's okay not to be okay. Our mental health is just as important as our physical health, and to never suffer alone and laugh. Laugh, laugh, laugh. That is a proven fact. I did it when I was in Rock Bottom's basement. I turned on a comedy special. I laughed. I go to comedy clubs. If I can't leave my house, I'll just watch comedies. I find something to laugh every day. Some people are stuck in a rut, but it's an instant vacation.
You mentioned your podcast. What can one find on your podcast? What will be the subject of your podcast? What's the name of the podcast, and where can one find it?
Fabulous. It's Peace Love Podcast. I'm on Spotify, and I talk about various different issues weekly about mental health, but I put a light spin on it. I try not to make it too dark. My latest episode is about Suicide Prevention Month, September right now, and every 11 seconds somebody dies of suicide. So I talk about that, for instance, in this episode, but I don't make it so dark and dismal.
You mentioned your traumatic past, and you mentioned your family situation. I don't know if any of the members of your family are still around, but post getting help and post recovery, being a survivor, have you had the opportunity to make amends with anybody in your past life?
They won't speak to me, but there's no reason why. I have no idea why. I have never had support. I don't know what it's like to have parents. I don't know what it's like to have cousins, aunts, uncles to support me and love me. They read my book and they were like, okay, this is how, you know, this is what she feels. And I'm like, well, they're facts. Y'all threw me out when I was a little girl. And they have not made amends. In fact, nobody has spoken to me or my children ever.
Wow. So
horrible. Yeah.
So does that fact, that for lack of a better term, unrequited love from your own family, has that played a role in hindering in any way, shape, or form your recovery? Or have you just gotten past that?
My entire life, up until recently, I have been a people pleaser. And I would say yes to anything. And then I would get mad at myself because I didn't want to upset someone else. Up until recently, I realized I can have boundaries. I don't have to do anything that doesn't make me feel good, but you don't have to be rude about it. Like, if somebody invites me to a party, normally I would go because I wouldn't want them to be mad at me. Now it's like, I'm sorry, I'm not able to make it. So I am not a people pleaser anymore, because that just ate me up inside, because I resented every time I did something that was not good for me.
So there's nothing wrong with putting Marnie first, correct?
No, you got to put yourself up on that pedestal and just take care of you. That is all that's important, because somebody else's opinion of you does not matter. What your opinion of you matters. That's it.
You know, in listening to what you have to say, and not only that, how you have said it, you seem like a pretty positive person. Have you always been that way? And is that one of the reasons why you were able to survive a lot of the things that you went through? Or is it through the journey that you've been on that you've become this person?
I've always been like, I don't remember a lot of my life, but when I talk to people from my past, they're like, you've always been the sweetest and I've always had a bubbly personality. This has always been me. But as I've recovered, my positivity, I have now, there's a silver lining on every cloud. Hypothetically, if I spilled coffee in the morning and I'm running late, I say to myself, okay, I wasn't meant to be there within those 5 minutes. If a red light happens, nothing stresses me out because I'm like, okay, this wasn't meant to happen. This wasn't meant to happen. And it's out of my control. Okay. So that has made, this whole journey has made me even more positive to just go with the flow no matter what. So I'm probably the most easiest, most laid back person right now.
So if someone reads your book, True to Myself, Peace, Love, Marnie, what if they themselves are not, let's say, the most, for lack of a better term, Pollyannish person in the world? How do they get over that hump is what I'm saying.
There are so many situations that I have been through that it doesn't matter if you're a 10-year-old boy or a 75-year-old woman or whatever, there is something in my book that everyone can relate to. The circumstances are different, but the emotions are the same. And there hasn't been, I say to people, I will give you $10,000 cash if you read my book and you don't tell me that you are blessed for what you have, you're grateful for your family, you never realize what other people go through. Not one person has called me on it. So I am 1,000% guaranteed that my book shows people, oh my God, look at this life that this person had. I didn't have it so bad. Not to dismiss anybody's trauma. Everything's traumatic to them, but people have this sense of gratitude for what they have after they hear every horrific chapter after chapter.
The book is called,
but it all comes positive, full circle after each of them.
The book is called True to Myself, Peace, Love, Marnie. Marnie, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
I thank you for having me.
Marnie Goldman, author of True to Myself, Peace, Love, Marnie. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0683, and you'll find the link to Marnie's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that is heard on many a fine radio station, including CKUW 95.9 FM, in Winnipeg.
Portions of the Stuff File program are available to you via audia.io. At Audia, you'll find hundreds and hundreds of Stuff File program interviews going all the way back to 2009. That's Audia, AUDEA.io. There's more Stuff File program coming your way right after this break.
Hey, how would you like to become a patron of the Stuff File program? It's easy to do. By going to patreon.com and becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. If you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. Join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. And Andrew, NASA's plan to officially go back to the moon has had a few hiccups, to say the least.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we were all hoping that the new SLS rocket system would be launching in the first few days of September. And then lo and behold, we get a scrub of the mission and then a delay in rescheduling the launch until the end of September. And it looks like it's really fuel leaks that are to be looked at, sensors on the engines, all related to the main booster engines, where they're really trying to keep the rocket system on the launch pad without having to take it back to the vehicle assembly building, because that would even push it back even farther. But there are some people saying that it may not even be able to launch end of September, depending on if they can fix those leaky pipes in the main booster section.
Yes, the expected launch is either September 27th, and the second or backup date would be October the 2nd. You say some people are querying the idea of whether it will be able to launch or not. Where do you come down in this situation?
Well, I think what's interesting is that NASA did what are called wet dress rehearsals, where they had a few months back, where they basically test everything in terms of preparing for a launch up until a few minutes from liftoff, without actually lifting off the rocket. And those tests basically skipped about 10% of what was on their manifest of things that they needed to go run through to make sure that the rocket is in fine order to do its mission. So they skipped 10% of stuff. And guess what? It's part of that 10% of things they didn't test in the wet dress rehearsal that's now coming to light, causing problems for them in the actual attempts to launch. So there are folks saying, well, who knows what else is in those 10% of things that were never tested properly that are going to be cropping up either at launch or post-launch during the mission as well. But hey, there's no astronauts on board, so this is, you know, this is the way that they should be doing the test, you know, the test. But a lot of people are just wondering, why did NASA skip those pivotal points? Why did they are they rushing into doing this Artemis launch because of public pressure?
Well, do we have any speculation as to why they didn't do it, why they rushed through it, or is it just everyone is guessing?
Everyone's guessing. They're not really saying very much about it. But if I would hazard a guess, I think it's just there is a lot of political pressure on them, if we're, you know, beside the public side of getting this going. I mean, already this launch system, this rocket, this mega rocket that they've built has gone through so many stumbles over the years. I mean, it's almost two decades in the making, this rocket system that was always intended to replace the space shuttle system. You know, part of the problem also, Peter, I think, is that really this rocket and the components are basically cobbled together from leftover components of the space shuttle launch system. The engines are from the boosters, the space shuttle booster rockets. The fuel tank itself is basically rejigged from leftovers from the shuttle program. Once it was retired, there was a lot of elements, rocket elements, launch system elements that were left behind. And that's what they recycled, basically. And a lot of the top administration people have openly questioned, was that a good idea to really use cobbled together systems from the old SLS space shuttle launch system? And, you know, Peter, I mean, just think back at how many times there were scrubs. You know, it's really interesting when you look at the space shuttle system and the whole history of it, the program, they were constantly, we were always bumping launches and finding leaks and all of this stuff in the engines and piping. We found all these kind of sensor problems. It was such a complicated rocket system, launch system for the space shuttle program. Everyone said that this was so impractical. So the big question is why did they use all these old, you know, shelved components? They were trying to save money, perhaps, or recycle them. They had them there. They thought that they would speed up the development of the Artemis program because it was already delayed multiple times. So I think there was a lot of pressure at hand, and we see what we see now because there's this legacy of this overly complicated rocket system that the space shuttle program used, and it's those very same components that we're seeing causing the hiccups now in the Artemis program.
So it's literally a Frankenstein's rocket. cobbled together.
Very much so. Very much so. And this, again, is something that's, you know, people are wondering, is it going to really bite them back? NASA having relegated themselves to using the system. I mean, why did they? Is it political pressure? A lot of senators and politicians, you know, are in states where there are, you know, they, you know, this is a job creation program for them, you know, in many states, at the space NASA's contracts and stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff, history that goes in there, and a lot of things that, you know, people don't speak about. But then you look at what's happening with SpaceX and how they're developing a brand new rocket system, even a bigger one. Theirs is called Starship. It very will leave NASA's SLS system in the dust, because it's a reusable rocket system. It's using new technology. It's built in a very different way. Brand new components, and it's coming along much faster. So the question is, will NASA's rocket SLS system become a dinosaur
before it even gets off the ground?
And
I was mentioning to you off air on a previous conversation, you know, the kind of weary omen that is raising its head right now. The fact that this is Artemis 1. Artemis is the twin of Apollo, if you go into your mythology, and we know what happened to Apollo 1. It exploded on the launch pad, and it actually killed 3 astronauts.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and I wonder why then they have no astronauts on board this one, right?
Exactly. So the idea that that they're not being, I would say, overly cautious with how this is going forward is a bit of a concern for me.
Yeah, I mean, these, you know, we're only seeing as, you know, in the public side, we just see little tidbits, you know, morsels of information being released. But, you know, folks that follow this, these programs in detail, and have, sources within the agency are going, well, it really is, you know, a product of what, you know, they've decisions that were made well over a decade ago in creating this program of, you know, how are we going to get back to the moon? What's the technology that we're going to use? So it's just going to be really interesting, Peter, moving forward to see if this space launch system can really do the job. What I think also worries me is that if it is so complicated, if it's using the heritage of the space shuttle, overly complex, and technology that was just basically too difficult to use, how many launches can we expect from the SLS system and from NASA? And I have my doubts. You know, we may only see 1 or 2 launches a year at most of this rocket. If we can, and it'll be super expensive. We're talking billions of dollars spent for each launch. And then you have next to it an even bigger, more powerful rocket at SpaceX's building that is reusable, is destined to have a recycling of maybe a launch every month or so, or even more often, because there'll be multiples built of this, you know, whole fleets of the Starship rocket. How are they just going to continue chugging along and justifying the NASA's SLS system? I don't know.
Well, there's so much to talk about when it comes to what the Artemis plan is and man's return, or at least NASA's return to the moon. And I am assuming that we are going to have to go to Patreon to discuss this even further. But I do want to do one more situation. I want to share one more item before we go to Patreon. And that is, considering all the trouble that NASA is having, Blue Origin currently has a situation where they recently had a rocket failure, but it was also a rocket success, if you know what I mean.
Well, it is, because they were actually tested the escape launch system for the capsule portion of the rocket. And while they lost the booster section, the capsule that would have carried humans normally, this time it just carried scientific experiments, allowed that capsule to return with parachute safely back to the sands of New Mexico. So it worked as it was destined to work. It was an unintentional experimentation with a failed booster rocket. But I guess you can chalk it up to, you know, a success in that it's working the way it's supposed to.
Absolutely. Andrew, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I think we should go over to Patreon to talk about some other things that are in the news, including the latest James Webb discoveries. Also, astronauts' blood DNA mutations that we're learning about these days, among other things. And maybe we'll get your real feelings on what's coming up with the Artemis program and everything involved.
sounds good.
Yes. Andrew Fazekas, unfiltered, as it were.
I love it. Let's do it.
Thank you very much once again, sir, for being on the program.
Great to be here. Clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0683, and you'll find the links to Andrew's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. Patreon subscribers, you can hear more of Andrew as a Patreon reward extra, where we'll discuss yet more discoveries by the James Webb Telescope, astronaut blood and DNA mutations, plus what a black hole sounds like, and more. Just go to our Patreon page, and if you're not already a member, become one of the select patrons of the show. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A 40-year-old man has been dubbed South Africa's dumbest criminal after walking into a police station to get a job there despite being on a wanted criminal list. Thomas Nkobu has been on the run for the last 7 years after stealing hardware products worth more than $1,200 while working as a delivery man in 2015. He reportedly diverted deliveries to other addresses without the owner's consent or knowledge and went on the run as soon as the manager realized that some invoices were missing and several products had been delivered to the wrong address. Nkobu's name was added to the police's wanted criminal list as soon as his employer filed a complaint against him, but he managed to avoid capture for 7 years. And then he walked into a police station like he didn't even have a criminal record. A police spokesperson told reporters that his colleagues at the local police station were baffled by the visit. On August the 15th, the 40-year-old man reportedly walked into the station to complain that he hadn't received a reply to his application for a job at the station and asked what the holdup was. Now why? Oh why? If the police have been looking for you for 7 years, would you waltz into a police station to inquire about your job application? Or, taking one step back, why? Oh, why would you actually apply for a job with police when they are actively looking for you? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0683. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0683. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including KDXRadio.com, TrueTalkRadio.com, over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, WLSLLPFM in Dade City, Florida, Free 99 in Tyler, Texas, CKUWFM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, Local 107.3 FM in St. John, CHSR in Fredericton, and also streaming on just about any streaming service your little heart desires. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.